No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
The holidays are here, and Kirkland's Home has everything you need to make this season shine. From beautiful tree decor and ornaments to cozy throws, candles, and festive accents, you'll find inspiring ways to deck every hall. Explore thoughtful holiday gifts for everyone on your list at prices that make celebrating even brighter. Come visit Kirkland's Home and discover great deals across the store as you decorate, gift, and gather. Kirkland's Home, your destination for a beautifully decorated holiday season. Come see us today.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the discussion of the defense. Joining me again is Childs Walker. Childs, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. We drowned some sorrows in part one, and we'll drown some more in part two.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. Some good points made by Childs about a number of things. But one of the key questions we tried to dig into a little bit was whether or not this defense was fixable, whether there are changes they can make on the fly. We saw them do it in 2019 and work miracles. We saw them bring in Roquan Smith at midseason and thoroughly transform the defense at what I think we look back on now as relatively small cost. Wouldn't you say a second round pick and a fifth round pick for Roquan? They paid up extra to basically have the Bears take a chunk of his salary so they could bring him on. But I think it's worked out for the Ravens.
I mean, certainly in terms of that year, it worked out smashingly well. I mean, the Ravens then obviously doubled down on that by making a significant investment in Roquan as a long-term centerpiece of the defense. And that has also worked out pretty well. Although he is very expensive for the position that he plays. So he needs to be an elite producer to justify that contract. And, you know, I'm sure that's a conversation that we'll be having, as we get toward the end of this year and we look toward the offseason, but yes.
Yeah, he's got a couple of $30+ million cap years over the next two. No, all alternatives are bad, basically, because they only save about $7 million while taking on a lot of dead cap, about $25 million or so in next year alone. But then in 27, it does look like he's a very likely cut if they don't extend him somehow. So it's really, right. I think, would you agree the most likely thing is at this point they probably extend Roquan? Or do you think that they probably let him walk?
I wouldn't say it's dramatically one way or the other. I guess I would lean a little toward extension right now. But again, I mean, it's a lot of money, and if he's not elite, you know, given some of the other stuff that they're going to have to figure out, I don't think it's a given that he doesn't walk.
Sure. And I guess even to go through the act of extension and to really have the money for it, they probably got to restructure Lamar Jackson to get a lot of deals done. But I mean, that's the real tough nut
by
to
far
crack.
The biggest domino. Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, how motivated is Lamar to do that? We'll find out.
If you had to say right now, and I know a lot of people are already talking about, you know, putting memes up or pictures up of Lamar Jackson in a Dolphins uniform, do you think there's a reasonable chance that he plays out his last 2 years with the Ravens after this year and then leaves?
No, I think that's still really unlikely. We went through this with the last one, right? I mean, he's not operating on their timeline. He's operating on his own timeline. But I mean, ultimately, I think logic will take us to the place where we think it's going to take us. I mean, as it did with the last one. I don't see why he would be eager to get out of here.
Right. I don't either. I think he's got a very good situation. I think he's got an offensive coordinator. I don't know. A lot of people are driving a wedge that, you know, obviously won't work, but they're projecting that there is a chasm between him and Harbaugh in terms of how he's used, or between him and the organization in terms of the talent built around him, for example. But I don't really believe that's true. I think they provided him with the best set of skill position players the Ravens have ever had. The offensive line, another question. You know, they've gone cheap on the offensive line in some ways, but you know, I see it working out. It just doesn't have that incredibly significant friction of the franchise tag available this next time, and I don't think it'd be a lot more money that Lamar would get from another team than he'll get from the Ravens, and he'll get it earlier and it'll be more secure if he signs it with the Ravens, but. It still worries me a little bit when they go through an offseason where an extension would have made all kinds of sense. And DaCosta talked about going, you know, for a visit down to his place and whatnot, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that we've seen enough now that, you know, he's, I mean, this is where not having an agent as the intermediary does come into it, right? Because you don't have that person whose sort of default impulse is going to be like, well, we're going to do this like all the other quarterbacks do it, right? Like we know how this works. We know the number is in a pretty tight ballpark and we'll go back and forth, but we know where we're trying to get and when we're trying to get there. I think that's pretty easy when you have an established agent. You don't have that in this case. So, I mean, it's a lot of it does come down to when does he feel compelled to do it? And I mean, he clearly didn't feel that last offseason. I mean, there will be a lot more urgency at the end of this year. Don't think anything's going to get done during the season. I would be shocked by that. But he's a little unpredictable in sort of when he's going to get motivated about these things and what is the impetus. I mean, it's not always clear. I mean, I think it ultimately plays out pretty logically. And I don't have any reason to think that it won't, but how we get there, there could be some uncertainty and some tension and whatever. I mean, we saw all this the last time. So, I mean, you know,
the last time though, you know, basically anybody who wanted to sign Lamar, I'll remind you, all that they had to do was give a first round pick and give an offer that the Ravens wouldn't match. And that was really right. The hard part. It was to do the both of those things. There's not that additional first round pick friction this next time. It'll just be, can the Ravens match an offer directly that some other team is making? And it's not necessarily even that they'll be on a level playing field. I mean, if literally he's trying to sign in Miami or he's trying to play in either Texas or even Tennessee and Florida, which don't have a state income tax, then I think, you know, the Maryland could be at a big disadvantage.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm how much things like that would come into play for him, I honestly couldn't tell you because, I mean, he doesn't – when he's asked about this stuff, he doesn't go into any detail on it, sort of what drives him. So it's very hard to say. It really is. And I don't want to attribute to him any motivations that I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing at that point. So,
yeah. No, that's smart. You're right. And I don't want to put you in that position. Let's go back to the defense. Talk a little bit about the pass rush for just a few minutes here, because this was one of the frustrations in the game for the Ravens. They allowed 11 ample time and space opportunities for Goff, which was 39% of the plays. By the way, that's quite high by today's standards. Usually teams are much better at getting to the quarterback within 3 seconds, but that's 3 seconds ability to step into the throw. Those 11 plays, he had 102 yards and 9.3 yards per play, which sounds like a lot. 8.5 is about average, but this was the whole frustrating thing about Goff. Goff was a little bit above average in every single category here. And he was about 18 yards above the standard on those 11 throws. Then there were ball out quicks. There were 7 of those, 25%, threw for 55 yards on those, 7.9 yards per play. Another 13 yards above the standard. He chiseled out of the Ravens defense that way. And he's pressured on 10 plays. And I know a lot of people think there weren't you can't find me 10 pressures on that. Well, I'll show you exactly where they were if you're interested. But 45 net yards on those. Now, the expectation is 3.5 yards per play on those. And he got 4.5. So he's 10 yards above expectation on those. And his total is right around 40 yards above expectation in total. I have 30 here, but I'm looking at these three numbers. They certainly add up to 40. It might be 30. I might be wrong on that first number, how I've added it up. Anyway, frustrating thing about Goff, and I'm going to get to some of the pass rush numbers by number as well, is that he's just very consistent beating you somehow with little dink and dunk passes. And, you know, some of them deeper in the middle of the field between level 2 and 3, to take advantage of your linebackers and take advantage of your safeties.
Right. And it all adds up to kind of what we said at the top of the first hour, which is that in the big picture, nothing that they did seemed to discombobulate him. I mean, as you said, there's probably more pressures than people would think, you know, just having watched the game. And I think that's partly a credit to him. He didn't seem that affected by it.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. Is he knew exactly how to read hot, how to get rid of the ball quickly when he needed to, and never put himself in a position where he was at really a lot of risk of having a sack. And when he did get in a position where he had to move around the pocket, one time he ran for yardage, but most of the time he just got rid of the ball pretty quickly into an empty spot on the field, whether or not it should have been called as intentional grounding or not. And I think in all those cases, one of the things Jared Goff's learned very well in his pro career, out of necessity, is how to get rid of the ball in a way that will not be called intentional grounding.
Right. But I mean, you know, I think we all at this point who have been watching football for a long time, you just sort of have a sense of when a quarterback is affected by pressure, when he's thrown off his game by it. I mean, he was the last time they played the Ravens, right? In 23, yeah. He was clearly affected by pressure in that game. He was not last night. I mean, it just didn't. I mean, watching the game, you never had that feeling. And even going back and seeing the individual instances of pressure, as you said, there were 10, you still didn't come away with the sense that, you know, he was off his clock.
Yeah. And it, much like the Allen game, Allen moved off the spot, moved to another part, made a big throw. Goff moved off the spot, moved to another point, and then threw the ball away a lot of the times, or ended up minimizing the damage or making a short throw, but it wasn't necessarily a great one. I look at the number of pass rushers with 3, 2 plays, 12 yards, 6.0, with 4, 14 plays, 95 yards, 6.8, with 5, 8 plays, 58 yards, 7.3. You see where I'm going with this. So 6, yeah. 3 plays, 17 yards, 5.7. I mean, and the one time they rushed 7 against him was the 20-yard throw on 4th and 2. To basically seal the game. So 3 for 7.2 yards overall. There's nothing that's any tremendous amount different from that in terms of numbers. So frustrating as hell, I'm sure, for Orr and the Ravens defense in terms of their inability to get there and inability to scheme up something that would be different.
And I think the Lions are thrilled with that, right? And against the top opponent. I mean, that's exactly what they want, especially when their running game is you know, wearing the Ravens down and ultimately breaking them.
I mean, if in all honesty, if the Ravens would be happy to get the Lions' performance, maybe just in the passing game over an entire game, because it's a very low variance kind of a way to run your offense. And that's what the Ravens' offense is missing this year. It's not the big plays. It's the problem is that they have too much of a barbell of results. Yeah. I want to talk briefly about some other schematic elements that Orr threw at them. They threw 7 off-ball blitzes at Goff, which is very low for the game, only 0.25 per play. And they got 44 net yards on that, 8.8 yards per pass. Again, you're going to notice some consistency in this. 4 stunts, yeah. All singles, 8.3 yards per play. Simulated pressure twice, 8.5 yards per play. It's even a little bit worse when you threw any kind of additional scheme at Goff when you do through no scheme, and it's incredibly consistent, which is frustrating as hell.
Yep.
Defense has to manufacture variance of result. They have to gamble much more than the offense does to win in the NFL today. Completion percentages are too high, and particularly when you're facing a team that's so comfortable with 4-down football, it's too hard to get the other team off the field without generating high variance outcomes in terms of individual plays.
Yep.
All right. Let's jump on and talk about some of the individual performances in this game. We always like to let the guest go first. Who would you like to talk about?
Let's talk about Marlon Humphrey, who had a very difficult game overall. Not that he did everything poorly, but he had a couple missed tackles, and St. Brown just cooked him on a couple of really big plays. I mean, on the touchdown and then on the fourth down, which is, as you said, I mean, his hold made that a successful play, whether they ultimately completed over the top or not. But I mean, it ends up being a double indignity, right? Because Marlon holds him, and then St. Brown still beats him for the big play down the field. So, I mean, you know, you saw Marlon just sort of looking defeated and perplexed after that play. And, you know, that was very much his tone in the locker room after the game. I mean, he did sort of stand up in front of a crowd and take his medicine in the locker room after the game. And I mean, you see him trying to sort of take on the leadership mantle of this defense in a lot of ways, to be the voice of experience and say, this is the standard we should be shooting for. And then after games like this, being the one to say, we're nowhere close. And I think last night he said, you know, we're just not very good right now. The problem with that is, of course, that he's part of that. I mean, he's not played to his standard this season. This is not the only game in which he would have said that. This is maybe his most obviously poor game of the season, and maybe one of the most obviously poor games of his career. Just when you look at some of the signature plays, but it's interesting watching him sort of navigate that line, not just as a player, but as a presence in the locker room. And I don't know how that looks to you. I mean, you're looking at it from a slightly different vantage.
Well, you know, you have that advantage of access, Giles, and it's a great benefit to you, no doubt about it. I would say his tone is very different from last year. Last year, he was clearly pissed off at the safety play, and without pointing the finger directly at those two, he said, "Look, we all need to get on the same page." And I'm paraphrasing here some. If you want to play football the Ravens way, do so. If you don't, you shouldn't be on the field, kind of thing.
Right.
And I don't, he didn't exactly say that, but it was very clearly directed at Marcus Williams at Eddie Jackson.
I think that was me. I'm sorry.
Okay. No problem. So a situation where it's not ideal. And Humphrey has made this transition to slot corner, I think, very effectively, and used his physicality in ways that have really helped the Ravens in terms of the run game and whatnot. This wasn't a game where he looked particularly strong there, I think, pretty obviously to most people who watch the film. But I think the day is coming when Marlon Humphrey moves to safety. And when that happens, I think he will be a great free safety or half field safety in this league. I think he has those characteristics.
Yeah. And I know you've said that when I've been on in the past, and I mean, I see it's kind of the Rod Woodson path. I mean, not the exact same skill set, but some of the same skill set, and you can definitely see why he would be excellent in that role. It's interesting. I haven't heard him. I'm not sure I've heard him talk about that directly or even be asked that directly.
I asked him the question.
You last did. That's right. Yes, you did. Yeah. What did he say? I can't remember.
So I asked him, have you had discussions yet about a possible move to safety at some time in the future? And his first thing was, no, those discussions have not occurred, but it's right. Always something I saw myself doing, is moving to safety towards the end of my career. So it's great. I mean, it's first of all, I don't think you could be more effective in terms of your answer than the way he did it. I don't even get the sense that he needs to be completely coached, even though he's a little bit of a wild card as a communicator sometime. He's a guy that really was very thoughtful about this thing. And you know, he knows every cornerback loses a step eventually. And when they do, moving to safety can be a great thing. He had a year last year that would tell you he's going to be able to play safety very effectively.
Yeah, he's I think he's the most insightful quote on the team when he chooses to be. And I'm not even sure it's close. I mean, and not just in terms of talking about himself, but in terms of summing up where the team is. I guess, part of the question though is, you know, if he's going to be in that role that we've seen him in primarily this year, when they come up against an elite receiver who likes to come out of the slot, like St. Brown, is he overmatched? He was last night. And I mean, it's at least something to worry about. Now, not many teams have a guy who is on that level, but it's something to keep an eye on.
I mean, the Ravens don't really have another answer for this year at that position. So Jair Alexander, maybe at his best in the past, might have been a guy you'd be tempted to move into slot to do that. But he's typically been an outside corner for his career. So I'd expect that to be the way things play out for him when he's on the field for the Ravens.
And I know they've said that they feel like Awuzie could do that if they needed to ask him to do it. But I mean, that certainly has not been his traditional role either. So, I mean, and you know, there's no reason to think that Marlon won't play better than he has so far and then he did last night. I mean, he's had rough patches in his career before and has bounced back. I mean, he had a very good year overall last year. I mean, you look at him, I mean, he's in tremendous condition. I don't think his dedication to football can ever be questioned. I mean, you know, even on that long run last night, I mean, he was sprinting down the field as hard as he possibly could to try to keep it from getting in the end zone. Right. So it's not a lack of effort or care.
That's a great point. I mean, the guy has just, you know, been out with a groin injury. And, you know, just at the end of the Cleveland game, you see him on there doing these groin injury exercises, basically, on the sideline. And then he chases down, you know, a fast running back, or at least I thought a fast running back, from long distance to make that tackle on Montgomery. That was impressive.
Yeah.
All right. Like Tom Freese's performance, too. The guy I liked even better is Wiggins, who now, and the Ravens really need this, appears to be flexing some of his star power. And he was one of the Ravens I thought that was just outstanding in this game. They only threw at him three times the whole game. They had one reception. It was for 0 yards. It was 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and he tackled the guy basically right at I don't think he made the tackle. He turned the guy 360 degrees in about as good a missed tackle as you can have. And then somebody else came up and took him down then. But whenever you retrack a skill position player like that, you don't really deserve a missed tackle for that. That's, you know, you completely blew up the run, you know, or blew up the pass in this case. But he looked good. I thought Wiggins has looked outstanding, and he's looked really outstanding finding the football when he needs to, reaching across the body, using his makeup speed to do it. The two plays he had on Tesla, the one that where he reached across his body for the PD, and then also the one on the right sideline where he had him covered and Goff had to throw the ball away. I thought just outstanding plays.
No, I think he's pretty clearly their best corner at this point already. And, you know, I know they had there was a lot of belief in the building that, you know, he would take the step this year and, you know, maybe even be a sort of a fringe Pro Bowl candidate kind of player. And I mean, you can certainly see that. You can certainly see that potential. And I guess the good thing to my eye is that I don't think his lack of physicality is biting him in any obvious way when I watch him. I mean, you know, he's not going to make dynamic hits in the running game, but he doesn't need to. That's not his role. And I mean, you know, if there was a worry about him coming in, it was that, I mean, traditionally the Ravens have like sturdy corners, right? I mean, you know, he's tall and long, but he's not going to be a, you know, traditional sort of physical body you up kind of corner. But I just don't see that limiting him very much at all right now.
Yeah, it's not. He's allowing under 5 yards per target right now, which is unbelievable. That's rarefied air for a corner. There might be, you know, one or two guys in the entire league that might be that good for a season. So that's been simply outstanding. I'm sorry. It's your turn to pick.
Well, I guess we can stick with the secondary for now. We haven't talked very much about Kyle Hamilton. I mean, obviously we've talked about ways in which he could be moved around as a solution to some of the Ravens' problems, which is always the conversation with him, of course, because he can do so many things at a high level. He's the best player on the defense. I don't think many people would argue with that at this point. Mm-hmm. I thought he had a very poor game by his standards last night. Again, I wouldn't say that he had the obvious blown play that sort of lost them the game. It wasn't that kind of thing, but he was just, and he kind of said this when he was on the podium afterward. I mean, everything was just a little bit off. I mean, he wasn't getting to plays as quickly as he normally does. He wasn't the force as a tackler that he normally is. I don't know that he ended up with any actual misses in charting it, any missed tackles, but he came away feeling that he didn't make the impact that he usually does and that he expects to that way. And it was the kind of night where they could have used a great game from him, obviously. And this was one of his lesser games.
Yeah, it was. He got called for, you know, kind of a ticky-tack penalty during the game too, which is unfortunate. That certainly costs him in terms of the value he provides the team. But, yeah. But beyond that, I thought that he was part of the issue of what was going on between level two and level three to get some players free there. The linebackers have a part they play in it to be certain, and they often get charged with a target if you're looking at a PFF target for the thing. So you might see a lot of that going to the linebackers. But some of that is the safeties not being able to come up and make plays. I thought that each of Starks and Hamilton had some weakness in this game. And frankly, I'm not concerned about Kyle Hamilton's ability to come back from a game like this and play well. He was giving up 2.5 yards a target or thereabout coming into this game. He's up to 5 yards a target right now. I'm not concerned about that. It's fantastic rarefied air again for a safety. But I'm a little bit concerned generally about the Ravens defense and their ability to close down that area between level two and three, which in recent years has been the area opposing quarterbacks have really picked on because it's where the Ravens are weakest. And it goes back to the days of CJ Mosley, who was a good coverage linebacker forced into a very extreme coverage role by who was playing next to him for a lot of his Ravens mm-hmm. career. And it just meant more is being asked of him. Same was done of Roquan Smith until this year. They're asking Buchanan to do more. He's not shown to be particularly great at it so far, but he's been in the passing lane a little bit. I can see him, basically taking away some throws from quarterbacks, but it's hard to see the impact on the throws that are made and really say that it's been fantastic relative to what they've had there before. But Roquan's been freed up to do some other things, which has been a plus this year.
What have you thought of Starks so far? I mean, I guess I've kind of thought he's been non-disastrous, but I don't see him elevating the defense right now either.
All right. Well, you can go almost to any player in the Ravens secondary, if you're not talking about Nate Wiggins, and say he didn't have a good game yesterday. So that's part of the things. But boy, Starks, the tackler, made some really big mistakes yesterday. A lot of bad angles to the ball, including on the 72-yard run. He was a big part of why it went so far.
I think he had the most missed tackles on the team, if I'm not mistaken.
PFF's got him for three here. I would doubt if anybody had more than that, although I know that various charting services have some extraordinary missed tackle numbers. I saw somebody had 20 missed tackles.
I know, for I know.
I mean, it's got to be the most draconian method I've ever heard of. It's like, how are you setting that? Because I look at PFFs, who I consider extremely draconian, and they're the one that I can actually talk to the people there and say, did you call that a missed tackle? Did you call this a missed tackle? It surprises me, and they'll look at it again and they'll say, yeah, here's why. Or they'll give me the grader's comments on it directly. I mean, they're very open about this stuff. I don't know who this other service is called 20 missed tackles, but PFF had 9 in the game.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The holidays are here, and Kirkland's Home has everything you need to make this season shine. From beautiful tree decor and ornaments to cozy throws, candles, and festive accents, you'll find inspiring ways to deck every hall. Explore thoughtful holiday gifts for everyone on your list at prices that make celebrating even brighter. Come visit Kirkland's Home and discover great deals across the store as you decorate, gift, and gather. Kirkland's Home, your destination for a beautifully decorated holiday season. Come see us today.
So the difference between 20 and 9 is night and day. But needless to say, Starks had a tough game from a tackling perspective. I thought things were getting off to a very good start when he got in the passing lane in a loose bracket variety, meaning he's behind the receiver, and he got in the lane to drop the interception in the first game against Buffalo. But since then, we've seen precious little that's really been good about Starks. He stretched one play out to the sideline in this game. That was good. But there hasn't been a whole lot that he's done on the field that's been exceptionally good. And the Ravens, the position they need him to play, you know, is really free safety. It's not the Kyle Hamilton spot where you really want the guy to be the jack of all trades, move him around as he will, transform the defense from that perspective. That's what he was at Georgia. And, it's just not what the Ravens need exactly. They need a free safety who could lock down that post and play exceptionally well on half field when they need him to.
Yeah. All right. So it's your turn.
I think Starks was the guy I was bringing up in a roundabout way after you talked about Kyle Hamilton. So you're up.
Gotcha. Let's see. I feel like we probably talked about Travis Jones enough already, right? I mean, is there much more to? I don't think there's too much more to say there.
From this game, I know from the first show, and just to remind people, please go back and listen to that. But you mentioned that he wasn't having a great game before he left,
right?
He did have a couple of pressures, as I scored it, two specifically that were within 3 seconds. Sometimes you'll get credit on PFF for a pressure where you're chasing the quarterback after the 3 seconds, you know, is up, and he may have a couple in there because they have him for four. But I still don't think that Travis Jones is Michael Pierce or certainly Brandon Williams in terms of setting his feet versus a double team. He takes a lot of double teams, and he's got to be probably even a little better than he is in terms of setting his feet. He's a mile ahead of CJ Okoye, who is terrible at it for a man his size. But he's behind both Pierce and Williams, who are truly elite at taking a double. Tony Siracusa be another one from Ravens history.
Yeah. We haven't talked about Awuzie much. Again, I don't know. I've not had a lot of complaints about the way he's played. I mean, I think he's basically met expectations. I mean, he's been forced to, you know, take on a full load with Jair not in the mix, and he's been pretty solid. And I mean, he's been out there. I thought he was certainly not part of the problem last night. And they signed him to be a guy that they could stick on the outside and have be not part of the problem. And so, I mean, I think that's one, again, if you're putting people on the positive side of the ledger from last night, he would be part of that group for me.
Yeah. I didn't think he was bad. Certainly. They had their way with some of the Ravens defensive backs, but I think if I had to pick the three that were in the most trouble, it was certainly the guys who were playing closest to the center of the field, which was bad because the other guys playing in the center of the field didn't really play that well either. Right. Roquan, I thought, was kind of an exception to it, but they were very effectively getting to him and blocking him when they were on combination blocks and climbing usually with the guard very effectively. So that was a shame to see. But Roquan had some impact plays early in the game. He was part of getting them off to a very poor start. And of course, Roquan had one of the greatest games ever by an inside linebacker for the Ravens last week. Against Cleveland. Yeah. We got a related question on this. So let's jump out to the mailbag for a second. And it's a Travis Jones question from Angelove85, who says, "Hi, Ken, why can't the Ravens generate any pass rush, and can it be fixed? Is it coaching, lack of effort, or just below average players? Also, did Travis Jones cost himself in a contract year as he looked underwhelming without Madubuike?" Two questions there.
Yeah, there's a lot of different stuff in there.
So first of all, did Travis Jones cost himself yesterday by having the guy next to him not be as effective as Matabike? Is how I'm reading that question. Or having him not being as effective with somebody other than Matabike would be the other way to look at that.
I mean, I don't think that one game is going to change Travis Jones's value or change the way that the Ravens view him. But if it is either A, part of a pattern, or B, it was because he was hurt, and being hurt either hampers him when he's on the field or keeps him from being on the field, could that limit his value? Sure. I mean, you know, that's always, yeah, it's always a factor. And that's the unknown right now. We really don't know. But I mean, in terms of one game taking away the sense that he's an impact player on the interior, no, I don't think so. I mean, I think he's shown that he is, and you know, they have a very high opinion of him.
Yeah, and I think anyone watching the film of the Ravens when he's been healthy the last couple of years would say the same thing. And they project Travis Jones into their starting lineup and see how much more effective he'd make their three tech. And that's my concern, is that the Ravens really have a guy that may be very difficult to sign based on how other teams feel about him. And all the non-tampering that probably is going on out there, where his agent is kind of feeling around and trying to figure out what he's worth on the open market from various sources, you know, may make it more difficult. I hope that they can come to an arrangement with Travis Jones, but it probably, if anything, I think the biggest issue is he hurt? He's cost himself some money if he got hurt, and not through any fault of his own. Don't get me wrong. Right. I'm not an insensitive asshole, right. Or at least not for that reason anyway, this is something where Travis Jones, you know, it happened to Brent Urban, where he got injured just at the wrong time before he cashed in terms of a really nice payday. And he never recovered it. You know, he made a little bit of money in the National Football League,
and we've seen it. I mean, you know, these types of defenders, when they really get paid, it's usually because they have a big year in that fourth year, right? I mean, that is the formula to get paid in a big way at that position. I mean, Matabike being the classic case, of course. So it's a huge year for Travis Jones, because I mean, we know his impact, but I mean, certainly football people from other teams will be able to see it in a hurry when they look at the film. I mean, I'm not suggesting this will be lost on them, but I mean, his sort of top line stats are not going to blow you away and demand a $90 million contract, right? I mean, he's not that kind of player. He's not going to have the Matabike production from 2 years ago. So, I mean, you know, he needs to be out there healthy, putting good film down, because I mean, the most superficial stuff is not going to scream star.
He's very much like Haloti Ngata in that way. Haloti Ngata, never.
Although I think Haloti really was a little more spectacular with the athleticism. I mean, Haloti would do stuff to be on a highlight reel multiple times a season. Travis Jones so far hasn't really been that kind of player.
That's fair. That's certainly a good point. We've seen from Travis Jones this year, some, which I've been really excited about, has been beating some individual double teams, particularly in that Cleveland game where they completely committed to it. In fact, to their own detriment, they left themselves with 2-on-1 matchups on the outside versus the left tackle on at least one occasion, maybe two, where they had committed to have the left guard Betonio and the center Posick block Travis Jones. And they could not get away from that, because that was so central. I call him Travis, I dare you to single me Jones. Yeah. At this point, he's a very exciting player. And I don't think he particularly cost himself a lot of money in this game. What was the other part of that 11 part question there? Let's see. Angelo,
I guess is the pass rush fixable? Is it a question of coaching or effort and I mean, look, to get to those things, I mean, I don't really think it's a question of coaching or effort. I mean, I think it's a question of personnel more than anything else right now. I mean, look, at the most simple level, they didn't have their two most productive pass rushers last night. I mean, that's no team is going to be in an optimal situation when that's the case, especially not against an opponent of that quality and that versatility. So, I mean, it's, you know, they were in a bad spot to start, and it turned out to be even worse than we thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And it got worse when they lost Travis Jones too for the game. So that was a obviously a bad situation. Detroit had almost finished passing the ball at that point, but they had that one big fourth down play that was still left in the tank. So, you know, an unfortunate set of circumstances. The question I guess I would ask that relates to it is, do you think if the Ravens had a way to go back in time a week right now or 10 days or whatever it would do to do it, that they would sign Jadeveon Clowney and have him now here as their fourth outside linebacker instead of Ajabo?
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting question. I mean, I guess we're not sure what Jadeveon Clowney has left in the tank, right? I mean, that's not a settled issue. I mean, he had a weird year last year after having such a terrific year with the Ravens in 23. I mean, he's such a spectacular athlete. And I mean, he fit in so well here before that. I mean, you would lean toward thinking he would be a positive, certainly compared to a guy who's not even playing. So yeah, maybe. But would I be 100% confident that Clowney would be an impact player again this year? I would not be. I wouldn't be absolutely certain of that.
Right. I don't think you can ever be absolutely certain. I would agree entirely with that. Let's see. Here's another question from Adam Costanza, who asks, would it make sense to try Lowry at deep safety to free up Kyle Hamilton? Felt like we could have used his playmaking ability closer to the line of scrimmage to stop some of the Lions' runs before they got started, especially given they didn't test us deep.
Well, and I mean, you sort of threw out that possibility yourself before we even got the question, right? So, I mean, it's definitely an interesting thing to toss around. I don't have a great feel for what their internal scouting report on Lowry would be right now. I mean, I certainly understand why he made the team. I mean, he was incredibly impressive from the moment he showed up. He's a very smart, determined kid. And I mean, you know, he's a person who's very easy to root for. And I mean, he did nothing but make plays in the summer. But whether what they've seen tells them that they want him out there for 50 snaps on the back end, I mean, so far the evidence says they're not there in their thinking. And it's really hard to think. I mean, how much better off would they be right now if they had Ardarius back there? But yeah, but there's nothing to be done about that. So I don't know.
The worst time for him.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. I mean, both for him and for the team. I think it's going to become a more frequent topic of conversation if they have more games like yesterday. I'll put it that way. I think you're on the right track. I don't think we're there yet in terms of them making that decision.
Okay. All right. Well, it took them 10 games last year to make really titanic changes in the secondary. And they weren't changes that were obvious to people. Putting Kyle Hamilton on the back end definitely reduced his value. Not that he isn't still, you know, the comparison I make, he's the queen of hearts on the back and he's the ace of spades. If you can play him close to the line of scrimmage, he's a dynamic player. In terms of Ardarius though, that was a real question as to whether that might work out. You know, tackling is such a central part of the role. You know, could you really expect him to do that? And there were questions about working out, but he made it up for it in a lot of other ways last year. Okay. A little more from the mailbag here. Jacob, he's at prof_Boggs, has just a comment for us. He says, it seems like each year the Ravens have to fix a previously unforeseen horror at the trade deadline. Are you going OL, cornerback, or defensive line? If Matabike comes back, I'd trade for an offensive lineman if there's someone available, but man, it looks bleak right now. I guess there is a question in there is where do you think the Ravens go? Where would you go, Childs?
In terms of if I were going to add somebody?
Yeah, so it's outside linebacker, pass rusher, or cornerback.
Or defensive tackle, right?
I'm sorry. It's Yeah, defensive line, sorry, offensive line or cornerback. Yeah. I'm sorry, those are the three. Yeah.
I'm always skeptical about adding useful offensive linemen in season just because they're so scarce around the league. They're just very hard to find. And teams are not, if teams have serviceable linemen, they're not letting them loose. So I think you're probably working with what you have there mostly. I mean, could you bring in a veteran to give you some ballast maybe, but I don't think to start that just doesn't seem likely to me. I guess right now, just because of the worry about Matabike, I would say a useful defensive lineman would serve the most immediate need. But I guess that and an outside linebacker, it's kind of six of one, half dozen the other. I mean, they really need both. So, I mean, could you find a player that you think could legitimately help you at either? I mean, I don't think one is a vastly greater priority than the other. I think they're short of both now. I mean, yeah. That said, it certainly seems like Van Noy will be back. Maybe not against Kansas City, but that feels like a 2 or 3 week thing. Whereas okay. Matabike is a much greater uncertainty. Matabike also a more important player, but a much greater uncertainty.
They've kicked the can down the road a little bit on the IR decision, it seems to me, because they really had some good reasons to make the moves this week with Zaire Mitchell-Payton coming up on his third elevation, which they might have wanted to conserve because he might be back down on the practice squad even if he came to the 53. But now they kind of have to make that decision. It looks like likely is probably, would you guess Kansas City for him, or would you guess one more game even?
No, I would expect him to play this week.
Okay.
I mean, nobody has said that definitively, but I expect him to play this week. Yeah.
Okay. That's where I am too, based on three limiteds last week, is to certainly hope that he would be back. So Ricard, I don't have any reason to believe, I don't have any timetable at all. In fact, I think the Ravens have been as open as they probably know it to be in terms of the thing not progressing at the rate they hope. And they just, it's not quite as menacing as the Matabike thing, but with Ricard, them not knowing, you know, at this point, it's pretty darn crossroady times in his career for this to be the case. So, you know, next year, I mean, the Ravens may decide Lucas Scott is the guy and they want to just move on from Patrick Ricard. And if he misses 2/3 of the season, I think that the impetus is going to be pretty strong to do that.
Yeah. I mean, every season is a crossroads season for Patrick Ricard. And I mean, he's a smart guy. He understands that. And he's had injuries. I mean, there's been small indications that, you know, his body is wearing a little bit, you know, in the last few years. And this seems to be another one in that it was an injury that they were not apparently concerned about when it happened, but it has become this sort of mystery box where they haven't seemed to know when he might get back on the field either. So, you know, they could use him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's one of the big pieces missing. Obviously, having a higher quality in the offensive line would be a big deal, but he's the point of attack weapon. He's the tip of the spear the Ravens have on a lot of run plays, and having him back would bring back a lot of – or would reduce the variance in offensive result a lot, I feel like. So it's something that I would really like to see back sooner rather than later. They just as much as Zaire Mitchell-Payton, I think, has been a kind of a pleasant surprise for what he's done on the field, he's not at all a receiving threat, and neither is Ricard, basically. And he's not nearly the blocker that Ricard is either, which is obviously the more serious factor.
Yeah. I mean, you don't feel him on the field
throughout
the game. I mean, you feel Ricard when he's playing, you know he's there and you know what he's doing.
There you go. All right, got one more here, and then we'll wrap this up. But Spencer Peterson says, Ken, is it just me, or does it seem like Owe is getting held blatantly on replay more than any other player? I'll try and answer this first, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on this too, Childs. Is that I think Owe, probably because he's mildly slippery and somewhat powerful, probably does look that way. The guy I think is probably going to show that more is Mike Green, because his natural style of play is one where he's going to dip a lot. He's very bendy and getting low. That's not really always game as much. Owe will try and power his way through the half man move, but that it's not something that he does get held, and maybe more than that, he asks for the hold more than others. But I think Mike Green is the player we're going to notice getting held the most the rest of the year.
I was going to say Owe certainly feels that he's being held and not called. Yeah. I can't say that when I watch him that I'm thinking that over and over. I mean, not particularly more than any other edge rusher of his caliber, I guess. I guess Mike Green is an important guy that we didn't really talk about directly. I don't know if you want to talk about him quickly before we wrap. I mean, he's obviously become far more important with you know their lack of depth of that position right now. I mean, played more than 50 snaps last night. I mean, I'll be honest. I thought he would have made a couple of splash plays by now, and he really hasn't. I mean, he hasn't. He's had some fine reps, and again, I don't think he's been awful. I don't think he looks like he shouldn't be out there or anything like that. But he hasn't really put his imprint on a game to this point. And certainly, their hope was that he would be that kind of guy. That I mean, he would be a guy who could make a play that might swing a game against a team as good as the Lions or as good as the Bills. And that's a lot to ask of a guy in his first three games ever, you know, coming out of Marshall. So, I mean, I get that. I think everybody gets that. And, you know, you give him time, but he hasn't sort of exploded off the screen. Like I felt like he did at times when he was playing against backups in the preseason. And again, not shocking, but we haven't seen that sort of next level thing that some people in the building think he can be.
I think that's entirely fair. I one of the things about Green is that, first of all, he's still gaining, I think, a lot of his grown man strength. But I think I love the fact, I hate the fact that he's getting a trial by fire because Van Noy is hurt. I love the fact that he's getting a trial by fire over, say, Ajabo getting snaps. I really love that because there's so much more of an upside with Mike Green and him playing 52 snaps and Ajabo playing six. Okay, maybe would I like it better if it was 45 and 13? Maybe. But I like Green getting the majority of that snaps and getting a chance to get those live fire reps. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it that players do at any time in camp to gain that experience against true elite talent that will use every dirty trick in the book against them. And you know, Tick Henry will not stiff arm other Ravens players during camp is just a perfect example of that. Even if they had a live practice day for any reason where they actually tackled, which they don't, you know, he wouldn't do that. He never plays in the preseason. You know, Green did obviously, so he had at least some of that going on, but he didn't play against elite talent there. So it was really a question of getting this live fire during the season. And you know, the difference between him and Ajabo, not just talking about this year, but talking about in each respective rookie year, has been Green's gotten a lot of playing time.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Great talking football with you as always, Childs. We'll call it here, but I really appreciate you making time for this. Not a small commitment to come on here for 2 hours, but every time we have a conversation, I thoroughly enjoy it. Tell people where they can find your work at the Banner and talk football online with you if they want.
Yeah, always good to come on. I'm at Childs Walker on Twitter, and you can read my stuff on the Baltimore Banner. The thing that you get every week is, you know, I do the five things we learned from the game. That goes up, you know, first thing the morning after the game. So, you know, you could have read all of my thoughts on what happened yesterday at 5:30 a.m. this morning. So that's the thing you get every week, and then other sundry features along the way. So yes, please subscribe to the Baltimore Banner if you have not already.
Okay, I want to ask you about that specifically because that's one of the things I really enjoy reading for you. I have enjoyed for years from the Sun, whenever I've been able to get it. But you, the five things we learned from the game. What's your timeline for a night game then? So that game is ending around 11:30. Do you already have a good outline of the five things are by the time the game ends, or do you need to go back and do?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm thinking about it throughout the game, obviously. And I mean, you know, I've been doing it so long that, I mean, I'm sort of processing the game through that lens. And I mean, there's usually, there's usually probably one or two things I know that I'm going to want to hit going into the game, just because there's such important questions going in. You know, certainly, you know, last night, you know, it was, you know, how are they going to compensate for Van Noy and Matabike not being there? That obviously ended up being a huge story of what actually happened in the game. So it was not hard to run with that one. You know, also thought it was going to be important to look at the offensive line. You know, would they have a little bit of a bounce back from, you know, uneven at best performance against Cleveland? So, I mean, that was something I'm thinking going in. So, I mean, I always have a few that I'm thinking going in. You know, usually try to do sort of a general overview of what I think this game means to the broader picture of the season and the first item. So, I mean, that's, you know, I have sort of a rhythm that I have in mind, but there's always stuff that surprises me. I mean, like, you know, last night, I think it was just the rawness of Derrick Henry's reaction to fumbling again. I mean, to see a player of that accomplishment and that sort of mythic physical stature be so clearly, like, I mean, he was
distraught.
Yeah. He was shaken by what happened. I mean, he was, you know, you saw it on the field, and then that was very much still the case in the locker room. I mean, he was having trouble sort of finding words to explain how he was feeling about it. And I mean, I sort of appreciate it. I found it poignant that he was, you know, I mean, he sort of called us over in the locker room because he knew he needed to talk about it. And, you know, I thought it was a very unvarnished view of him, whereas he's normally, I mean, he has every reason in the world to be the most confident guy on the field, right? I mean, based on his accomplishment and everything that he puts into it. So to see that vulnerability last night, I thought was striking. So, like, that ended up being an item because it just really struck me. And, you know, sometimes it is something from the post-game locker room instead of from the field. So it's, you know, I've been doing it a long time, so I sort of know him when I see him, I guess.
Okay. That's very cool. And thank you for the insight into your process. I think people certainly will enjoy that. Other folks out there, if you're thinking about being on a film study short, I always will have spots open for that. Oftentimes I can record a show or two per week. There's a bye week coming up. We'll have an opportunity to do maybe up to about four of them. Get your ideas to me. I just want, you know, maybe three bullet points about what you'd like to talk about, what you're passionate about. A narrow topic is always good. Something we can discuss in about 20 minutes. The whole point is to have some content that's a little shorter, thus the name, than my typical content, like Childs and I have been doing here for 2 hours that ends up being two shows. But appreciate you all very much. Thanks for listening. Childs, thanks for coming on again.
Ken, always good to be with you, and look forward to the next time.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Holidays are here, and Kirkland's Home has everything you need to make this season shine. From beautiful tree decor and ornaments to cozy throws, candles, and festive accents, you'll find inspiring ways to deck every hall. Explore thoughtful holiday gifts for everyone on your list at prices that make celebrating even brighter. Come visit Kirkland's Home and discover great deals across the store as you decorate, gift, and gather. Kirkland's Home, your destination for a beautifully decorated holiday season. Come see us today.